my guest today is literary agent Claire Roberts. Before we bring her on, though, let's talk about the fun drive we have going on. We now do it just once a year. If you've been with the show, you have heard this fun drive go on twice a year. We no longer do that. It's once a year. And the money we bring in for the fun drive goes totally to the show, doesn't go to any of us. We are all volunteers here. 100% of it goes to KUCI. It keeps the lights on. It keeps Writers on Writing on the air. The number here is 949-824-5824. Nicole Nelson, who has co-hosted the show many times over a couple of years, some not recently because she was busy getting her MFA, which she has gotten from Bennington. But she's out there answering phones, and we have great premiums. We have gift store certificates. We have new books, novels, memoirs. There's tickets to shows. There's all kinds of stuff. So I hope you'll call. $100 will get you a seat here in Studio A during the show, and you will help interview an author that we have on, or a literary agent as we do today. Again, the number is 949-824-5824. And please help us stay on the air. So let's bring on Claire Roberts. She is president of Claire Roberts Global Literary Management, a literary agency she founded in late 2018 after having spent over a decade at Trident Media Group, one of the largest literary agencies in the U.S. As vice president at Trident, she developed her own list while handling many of the agency's top clients in international markets, such as Justin Cronin, Marlon James, Michael Ondaatje, and Marilyn Robinson. She began her publishing career at Houghton Mifflin Harcourt and held executive positions at William Morrow, HarperCollins, and Penguin, Random House, U.S., before becoming an agent. In fiction, she looks for literary fiction, upmarket crime fiction and thrillers, and upmarket commercial fiction. In nonfiction, she's interested in history, memoir, and narrative nonfiction. She does not handle science fiction, romance, westerns, self-help, how-to, diet, and fitness titles, poetry, screenplays, or sports titles. Hi, Claire.
Hi, Barbara.
Hi, great to have you on.
Great to be here.
Let's begin by talking about leaving Trident to start your own agency.
Okay, well, this is a decision that I made after having spent wonderful years there. But I felt the time had come for me to really devote all of my time to developing my own client list, which I find extremely rewarding. And so I took the plunge, had a marvelous time while I was there, working with marvelous authors and heading up the Foreign Rights Department at Trident, which gave me a perfect window into the global publishing world, which I love.
So let's break down some of the genres you represent, because I think for some writers, it can be a bit, I don't want to say confusing, but maybe not even esoteric, just difficult to understand. For instance, upmarket commercial fiction. What exactly is that, and what titles, what releases might fit in that we might be familiar with?
I'll tell you how I define it. It would be a novel that has a very sort of warm, emotional core to it, but that is not falling into a specific genre, although it might touch on those. One client that I handled at Trident who I think may fall into that is Justin Cronin. His Passage Trilogy, which is a magnificent suite of books that has a fantasy element to it. So he reaches into the markets that enjoy sort of epic fantasy with the sort of Michael Crichton-esque science foundation to it, but he also appeals to readers who don't normally, you know, find themselves drawn to that genre. Okay. I don't know if that, does that help?
Yeah, that does help. What about upmarket crime fiction?
Upmarket crime fiction, well, I have an author named J.P. Smith, who is published by Sourcebooks here. His novel, The Drowning, you could call it psychological suspense, but it is wonderfully involving, captivating. It's a very clever crime novel, and that's what I call sort of upmarket crime. Books that have the ability to surprise you and to fall outside of what you might typically expect for a genre.
Okay. What about literary fiction?
Literary fiction, well, I'll give you an example of one of my clients. Her name is Anissa Bouzian. She's a Moroccan-American author. Was actually born in Tennessee. And her novel, Dune Song, is about a young Muslim-American woman in New York City when the attack on the World Trade Center happens in 2001. And it's about how that event affects her life and causes her to basically change her life totally in the wake of that. And very timely, too, since it's dealing with, you know, issues of immigration and prejudice against groups of people. So that is a literary novel that I have represented.
So then also with literary fiction, I'm guessing that language is probably more important than in other genres, and is, what about character development?
I would say that character is really a key element for me. In any book that I'm representing, but with literary fiction, definitely the characters have to be the kind of characters that you really connect with. And to be very believable, to be sympathetic without being, you know, completely good. I love flawed characters, and it doesn't have to have a happy ending by any means. There can be a tragic element in it as well. But the language is, and the writing is going to be paramount as well. I look for a book that sort of brings me under the spell of the writing and lets me sort of enter into the world that the writer is creating, and that I just want to remain in that world for as long as the text lasts.
So then the last one, well, not really the last one, but the other, excuse me, was thrillers. And so with thrillers, then how do thrillers differ from upmarket crime fiction and even possibly literary fiction?
Well, those three can actually overlap. A thriller, in my mind, doesn't necessarily have law enforcement characters in it. They could be people who have no relationship at all to law enforcement. A crime novel may or may not have a law enforcement character in it, but it tends to be more with those characters. You may have a police character, you may have an FBI character or a CIA character in there. Yes, there are definitely literary crime novels. There was a writer that I worked with at Trident, he was a wonderful writer, and he wrote Winter's Bone. He is an example of a writer who does write crime fiction, but it's also literary fiction.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I didn't see this category on your write up on your bio, but what I've been seeing a lot the last couple of years probably is book club fiction, and mm-hmm. that's really kind of a curious genre in and of itself. What is that? is that fiction that there's actually something to talk about in terms of, you know, something beyond the characters, something more universal to maybe the people in the book club, or I don't know.
Well, I think book club fiction, I think it depends on the book club and what the members are really looking for. But I think speaking just very generally, it is fiction that does perhaps have an issue to it, beyond the you know, the basic story. So that's, you know, sort of how I look at it.
Interesting. You're listening to Writers on Writing. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett, and I am with literary agent Claire Roberts. We are in the midst of a fund drive, and our number here is 949-824-5824. Any donation amount will be most appreciated, and we would love to hear from you. Nicole is out there at the phones. I hear her laughing with somebody, and hopefully you'll be the next one she'll be on the phone laughing with. Anyway, so Claire, there are all these novels now following Gone Girl and Girl on a Train that have the word girl, woman, wife, sister in them, like The Girl Who Lived, The Girl in the Sand, Woman in the Window. And so I can't help but think that novels that came after Gone Girl and Girl on the Train are sort of, you know, were written perhaps for market. Of course, I don't know. And maybe these were already in the works. But what's your opinion of all that and of books that follow what seems to be a trend?
Well, I'm going to answer that in two parts. Okay. Now, in my discussions with editors, they are telling me that this area of fiction is still a very active one for them, that booksellers have, in essence, consider this to be almost another category of fiction, as opposed to perhaps being a trend. So it's still working well in the market. It's still a strong area. Now, I think for any writer who wants to write a novel, I think he or she should really follow what they really want to write. I think that following trends is not, I wouldn't really suggest it, you know, because I think that the best books come from a writer dealing very honestly and completely with the material he or she wants to present, really exploring the characters, really thinking deeply about the kinds of situations those characters are going to encounter. So if a writer, you know, is tempted to sort of follow a model, you know, it's not necessarily a good idea. I'll put it that way.
Mm. So it also sounds like books that are written that might seem to be following a trend can still be, I don't know, good books, right? I mean, it's like as an agent, then I would think you are also representing what you love, what you want to read. Not following the trend or the market.
That's exactly true. You know, if I read a book, and many of the books that I read are that are offered to me, you know, by the authors to represent, are quite good. I have to have really a very strong connection to the material. I have to love it in order to offer to represent an author. That doesn't mean that another literary agent might feel quite differently and react to the material in a different way. But for most agents with whom I have this discussion, and we have it frequently, we all basically feel we really have to love the material and really connect with it very strongly. So I don't follow trends myself. I think that if you're following a trend, then by the time it's a trend, there's a good possibility that it may be on the way out.
Mm-hmm.
So you might be coming in very late to the game if you're doing that.
Sure. Well, let's talk about how you begin with a writer. So I will assume that query letters are the port of entry, and so a query comes in, and I'm curious how much you will read of a query and if it matters if somebody has referred this writer to you, whether you read it or not, and how much the presentation of the query matters in terms of, you know, grammar, punctuation, form, all of that.
Well, yes, the query letter is the port of entry for me, and what I am looking for is a compelling query that shows me that the writer is serious. I like to know a bit about the writer. I find it very helpful, although it's not a requirement, if the author has some sort of publication history, whether that is short stories, or having published with some of the presses in the past. The reason for that is because that, you know, sort of tells me that the writer has really given a lot of thought to his or her career, that they are building their sort of platform, so to speak. So I do look for that. But the query itself, I look for a well-written, engaging query letter, nothing cute or coy. That is not really what I'm looking for. I'm looking for a good description of what the book is about. If the author can bring in some comparisons to well-known authors, that's always very, very helpful. And I also feel like that shows that the writer is really serious about what they're doing. But it's not a requirement, you know. If I find something in the query that that makes me want to read more, then I'll request material.
Do you ever get queries written in the voice of characters?
Not so far. I haven't gotten that.
Yeah, I'm just curious. I think I had an author on once that pursued an agent that way and got the agent, but he was pretty unique, and I've just been curious about that overall, whether that's a good idea or a bad idea. It sounds like it's probably a bad idea.
I would have to read the query to really give you an accurate answer, but I would say that doesn't sound like it would be a way to reach me.
Yeah.
I'll put it that way.
Well, I'm curious again about sort of presentation, because I don't know if you'll overlook grammar glitches and punctuation glitches if it interests you, or if that will stop you right out of the gate. If, you know, in the first paragraph, the writer has, shown that he or she doesn't, you know, grasp where the comma goes or where, you know, italics go and all that. I mean, is presentation important, or how important is it?
Well, it is important, but you know, if an author has made, you know, quote, minor mistake, that doesn't bother me. I mean, we all make typos. We all, you know, may leave out a period or something like that. So that, you know, that wouldn't stop me. It's more of, you know, whether or not the words that they are saying is far more important to me. However, a very, very long time ago, I read a novel by a writer who really did not understand how to use a comma. And she had sprinkled commas throughout her text. It seemed almost random to me. And the effect that that had in my reading is that, because a comma is a pause.
Right.
That's what it's for. It tells the reader, pause here for a beat. And so as I was reading her text, I was pausing, you know, as I mentally read, you know, and it created a most disruptive kind of reading rhythm. So punctuation is important to some extent, because that really, I found it a very disruptive reading experience. That, I think, was a pretty extreme example.
Mm-hmm. Well, how might, so then, okay, the query comes in and you like what you see and you request, if it, say it's fiction, you'll request a partial or the full manuscript. What will happen next?
It will depend. Sometimes I request a partial and sometimes I request the full. And then I read it. And then I see if I like it. And I also, at that point, I'm thinking about who can I think of who would like this, which editors would like this. And if I can think of several editors who I think would like it, then the chances are good that I will offer to represent the author.
What about nonfiction? Let's focus on that a little bit. History, memoir, narrative, nonfiction. After the query, were you asked to see a proposal or the full manuscript?
That would be a proposal.
Okay. And even with a memoir?
Well, a memoir would be an exception.
Mm-hmm.
Most memoirs by debut authors do need to be the full manuscript. But other nonfiction is sold on the basis of a proposal. And if the proposal itself is not going to convince me that this is a book I want to represent, then I don't feel that I would be able to convince an editor at a publishing house successfully. So the proposal is the basis for that. And one thing I can say about proposals in nonfiction, when an author comes to the section where they do the comparable title discussion, that's a very, very important aspect of a proposal, because editors at publishing houses will be thinking, you know, as they are considering a book, are there other books that have been published that cover this area? And if so, how does this book differ from them? And what is the so-called angle of this book?
Do those typically need to be more recent titles, or might a writer include, you know, maybe there's a well-known title in their genre that came out 20 years ago?
It depends on how iconic that title is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's say if you're writing a biography of a well-known figure, and there is sort of an iconic biography that may be 20 years old but is very well-known, then as in your proposal, you would want to certainly address that title and explain why your new biography is going to be different from this book that is really, you know, perhaps the best-known book, the best-known biography of the figure you're covering.
So manuscripts, novels, or narrative nonfiction, or memoir, how important to you is the beginning, the first lines, the first paragraph, the first page? And if you're not intrigued once you get that, will you read on? Will you read on and see if the writer has buried the lead, buried the beginning of the book somewhere? Or is that enough to make you go, you know what, this isn't for me after all?
I read on because I feel like there is a possibility of exactly what you've just said, that the author may have, you know, started at a point which was not the best point. And so I do read on. I may not read the entire material, but I will read until I feel like I have given the author a reasonable chance with me. You know, but if I've read, say, 50, 60 pages, and I still don't feel that I'm connecting with the material in a way I would need to in order to offer to represent an author, then I probably will not continue.
That sounds like a lot of patience, though. I think you have a lot of patience. Don't you?
Well, maybe I do. Maybe I do.
I'm not saying that's a bad thing. You know, it's just, I don't know. I think if it were me, after the first five pages, if it wasn't happening, I'd probably say, okay, that's enough. But that's me.
Well, I can certainly understand that. And that's the way... I put myself into the shoes of, say, a reader in a bookstore who is, you know, paging through a book to see if they want to buy it. And I don't think they read more than five pages, generally speaking, in order to make their decision. But if, you know, let's say on page 16, you know, something starts to happen that you didn't see in the first part, then it may be a question of, you know, seeing if the author is willing to revise. Because I do work very closely with my authors if they want, you know, editorial suggestions. And that's actually an even more patient process than reading the manuscripts. So, yes, patience is probably a good quality to have as a literary agent.
I think so. You're listening to Writers on Writing. I'm with Claire Roberts. Her agency is Global Literary Management in New York, and she's been with us since the top of the hour, and she'll be with us for more time to the top of the next hour, I hope. And in the meantime, we are in the midst of a fund drive, and we need to keep the lights on here and need to keep KUCI on the air, and that can only happen with your donations of any amount. The number here is 949-824-5824. We have gift certificates to bookstores, tickets to concerts, t-shirts. We have books. We have new books, novels, memoirs, all sorts of things to give you as a premium and as a thank you for donating. So I think Nicole is a little lonely out there and would love to talk with you. The number is 949-824-5824. So, Claire, you said that you'll work with a writer on revisions if they want editorial advice. And I'm assuming this is once you take them on before you send it out, or might you ask for revisions if someone sends you a manuscript or a proposal and you like it, but it's not quite there, and if they revise and resubmit to you, you may like it more and take them on at that point.
Well, generally speaking, I don't work with an author editorially unless I have agreed to represent them.
Mm-hmm.
very occasionally I have made an exception, you know, and because I felt there was a very, very strong core to a book that I liked, but I felt that I wouldn't be able to sell it in its current form. And very occasionally I have asked or I've suggested if the author would like to revise and resubmit, I would be happy to take a look. Basically, if I do find something that I really like, and if the author wants to revise and resubmit, I'm happy to take another look. That's always a possibility.
So for the listeners who may be new to how agents work, can you briefly talk about that? You know, I know writers have questions. Should they pay an agent a fee to read their work? Of course, no, don't do that. But then what happens? You know, how does an agent work once they take you on? And I don't know, probably most writers know that agents take a percentage off the top when it sells, but maybe if you could run down just sort of the overview of what happens.
Okay, sure. When you take on a writer, first of all, if there's editorial work to be done, you work with the writer to get the version that you'll be submitting. And then an agent submits the manuscript to a list of editors. If the writer is a U.S. writer, you start with generally the U.S. market. And then once you have a sale, in the U.S. market, and here I would like to talk a bit about my experience with the international markets, if that's okay.
Yeah, please do.
A decision is made, you know, whether or not to sell just what we call North American English language rights to a U.S. publisher. There are all kinds of ways of structuring a deal. There are times when an author will sell all the English language rights as well as the translation rights to a publishing house. And sometimes, you know, selling all those rights may make perfect sense. This is the conversation that the author needs to have with the agent. However, if the author's work might have appeal in the international markets, there is a huge aspect of publishing beyond North America. So let's say the agent has sold for the author the rights to a U.S. publisher, and they're only North American rights. That means you have a ton of markets left over in which to sell the author's work. There's the United Kingdom, and then there are the translation markets, Germany, France, Italy, Spain, the Netherlands, Scandinavia, the Asian markets, Eastern European markets, Turkey, Israel. And so at the point where the U.S. sale has been made, then you have another decision, the author and the agent, to make, and that is when to submit in the international markets. Sometimes you wait until there is an edited manuscript. On the other hand, if the changes are going to be very minor, you may go out right after you've done the U.S. sale and go out to the U.K. markets. U.K. editors are pretty used to reading unedited material, and so that's often something that happens at that point. And then once you have an edited manuscript, it's more typical to wait for an edited manuscript to go out to the translation markets. So it's an ongoing process, and there really are so many opportunities for an author just beyond our country.
Will you ever go to an international market first before the U.S.?
If the author is an international author. For example, with the author I mentioned earlier, Anissa Bouzian, I actually sold her in the UK first. Mm-hmm. That was the first sale that I made. And if I have an author who is, and I do have some who are British citizens, then I will go to the UK markets first.
Is it still 15% commission for you in the U.S. and 20% foreign?
It is for me. It is for me, yes.
And then it changes if it sells to film? Is that so?
If it's a film sale, is 15% is the commission.
Okay. You're listening to Writers on Writing. I have a little bit of time left with Claire, and the fund drive is still going on. You can also donate online. You can go to KUCI.org if you'd rather not get on the phone. You can donate there. Just please indicate that you listen to Writers on Writing, so we hear about that. What about, gosh, there's so much more to talk about. We have so little time. I'm curious if self-publishing has affected agents, has affected you. And I guess what I'm thinking is that because there's so many books self-published these days, do publishers perhaps pay more attention to agented submissions now because of that?
I think definitely they pay more attention to agented submissions. And because they get so much, so many emails, you know, from writers. So if someone who is a professional has agreed to spend their time working on an author, that goes a long way. And so definitely. I don't think that self-publishing has changed that very much. I think self-publishing is great for writers, and if they become very successful, and if they want to go into traditional publishing, then they have that option. But I think self-publishing gives the option to authors who might not be able to reach a traditional publisher. Their work still gets out there. I think there is... I think, you know, if you have written something that you love, and but maybe a traditional publisher isn't the path you want to take for whatever reason, I think it's great. You can publish it yourself and have the satisfaction of having your work out there.
Will you ever take on a book that was self-published?
I would if it's been very successful.
And what would that mean? What numbers are you looking at to consider it successful?
Probably having sold in the range of 20,000 copies.
Mm-hmm. Over any period of time or a short period of time?
I would say within the first, say, 9 months mm-hmm. of publication. Mm-hmm. Again, it would depend on the genre. If someone self-published a very literary novel and had those kinds of sales figures, that would be terrific.
Yeah.
You know, if someone was writing a more popular kind of book and didn't meet that, then that would be maybe another matter. But the reason why I say this is also because publishers, that's the kind of number they're looking for. Hmm. If they want to take on a self-published author. But it does happen.
Hmm. Will you look through literary journals and pursue writers? Do you ever do that?
I absolutely do.
And are there certain journals, or will you just randomly go through, you know, top tier, middle tier, lower tier, just checking things out? How will that work for you?
I look for... magazines, online magazines that are really publishing literary fiction. So that could be, I mean, there are a number of them. There's Catapult, there's Carve magazine, you know, as well as the, you know, the perhaps the better known ones. Another area that I think is worth mentioning for authors is literary contests and prizes. If an author wins a literary prize, that's a great thing. And I also look for literary prizes where authors have won.
So that brings me back to the query letter. And so I know writers have a really difficult time hyping themselves or promoting themselves, and they just feel like they're bragging if they kind of go on about stuff. But I would think in the query letter, it would be really important to mention contest winnings and you know, anything really that kind of puts you in front in a certain way. I mean, you might not mention, you know, writing or winning a contest with your, you know, I don't know, local writers club. But, you know, maybe talk about that, how writers should promote themselves in a way that is appealing.
Well, they absolutely should mention anything like that in a query letter. It's really important. And they should not be shy about that. It's not bragging because, you know, I mean, let's face it, I don't know this person at all. They send me an email, and I need to get to know, I need to get to know them. I need to get to know what accomplishments they have with their writing. A literary prize is a great thing to mention. So an author can do it without bragging. It's just a fact. I mean, that's how I see it. Now, if an author, and I have received these queries, this is something that I would suggest an author not do. Is to start off a query by saying, I have written the great American novel.
Yeah. Good luck.
And, you know, I have received queries that have started exactly like that. So that's off-putting for me.
Yeah.
You know, having confidence is an asset. Being maybe foolish about how you present that is another matter. But yes, but anything that you, if you have gone to an MFA program, if you have won student prizes, you know, there are some MFA programs that have pretty prestigious prizes, like the University of Michigan, the Hopwood Awards. You know, if you've won a Hopwood Award, you know, that would be something to mention. If you've had, you know, writing retreats, if you've been selected for, say, a McDowell Fellowship or a Millay Colony, anything like that is absolutely something to mention.
And these days, there's so much being said and focused on regarding diversity. Do you want to hear about an author's nationality, or is that unsavory?
I think if it is important to the author, we are seeing finally a climate in publishing where an author's background and diversity is really a good thing, and publishers are trying to publish the work by a greater variety of writers, all of which I applaud. So if the writer feels like it's relevant, I think it's worth mentioning.
I wanted to ask you about indie publishers or smaller publishers, because it used to be that literary agents were really going after major publishers where perhaps, you know, a nice advance would be forthcoming. And it seems that agents are now pursuing smaller publishers or indie publishers or even hybrid publishing. Can you talk about that?
I think independent publishers are wonderful. I think that very often you'll find they're willing to take a risk that a major publisher just might not be able to do. So I think you are going to find some very, very interesting publishing being done by the independent publishers. And by way of example, there is an important literary award out of the UK. It's called the Man Booker International Award. And all of the writers who have been shortlisted for that, I believe, are all published by independent publishers in the UK. And this has been remarked on by a lot of people, not just myself, but, you know, as a sign that the independent publishers are the ones who are really finding the new voices with the potential to be very important writers, you know, for our era. And they're the ones who are doing, you know, some of the most interesting publishing right now. So, yes, I submit to independent publishers. Independent publishers still have a tremendous amount of submissions that come to them. And, you know, so being published by an independent publisher means you've been through a very rigorous selection process to be taken on by them. And so I think that, you know, if it's good for the client to be published by an independent publisher, I'm all for it.
Also, there was one other thing. Oh, I know. It's finding agents. There's so much information these days that you can find on agents. So how might a writer kind of parse that information, pay more attention to searching out agents? You know, I mean, it used to be you had to interview the agent, you know, you'd have a phone conversation. These days you can find out so much so that when you do finally make contact, you know, there's probably very little you really need to talk about. I would think chemistry is important. I don't know. What sort of things should writers really pay attention to? And what do agents really pay attention to as well as the work?
As an agent, I pay attention to, yeah, the chemistry is vital. I pay attention to a writer who is in it for the long haul and who really wants to build a career. That's very important to me because the writers I take on, my intention is to build their careers and to have them be clients for as long as you know, it's a good relationship. I think for writers, they should look at what, clearly they should look at what the agent is really looking for. And one of the things that I think really is a waste of time is if a writer queries an agent in an area that he or she says she's not representing writers. For example, you know, I get queries from screenwriters, and I just don't represent screenplays. So, you know, they would be much better off going to someone else instead of sending that to me. I think that one thing, if a writer wants to find an agent, this is advice. I worked for a legendary publisher named Nan Talese mm-hmm. some years ago, and writers would sometimes ask her, how do you find a literary agent, because she would not consider a writer unless he or she were agented. So then came that question, well, how do I find an agent? And she said, go to your bookstore and pick up the books of the writers you like and who you admire, and look and see if there's an acknowledgement to a literary agent in that book, and that will tell you that, you know, perhaps that literary agent would be open to considering your work. And I've always thought that was a really good tip.
Yes, definitely. Well, what about you? How can people find you?
They can go to, they can email me at info@clairerobertsglobal.com. And I also have a website. If they Google Claire Roberts Global, that will come up, and that will give my submission guidelines. And read them, and then send me a terrific query letter.
And any last words or words of advice for the writers listening?
I would say if you're really, really dedicated to becoming a writer, keep at it. Learn all you can. Read, read, read. And I would say be open to feedback, even if it's not praise, but as long as it's helpful. And, you know, I think if someone is not being helpful to you, don't listen to it. So, you know, you can listen to too much. You can listen to too much feedback, too.
Yeah, you
sure have
can.
To follow. You have to follow your inner voice, no matter what.
Claire, I so appreciate you taking the time. You've been really informative and enjoyable. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. I've had a wonderful time talking to you.
You're welcome. That was Claire Roberts. Her agency is Global Literary Management in New York. And and thank you to Rosalia and Rena for your donations. You have made me very happy. And maybe that'll keep the lights on for another day or another week. No, I'm kidding. Anyway, you've been listening to Writers on Writing. So we're here every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific time. Tune in. And the phone here, we're still taking calls, 949-824-5824. You can go online at kuci.org and donate there. And that's it for now. We'll be back next week. Thank you for listening.